Like to acknowledge my co-authors, Bill Kusta, Steve Evett, Terry Howe, and Prasanna Gowda. And to get to the point, I've decided to skip over the latent and sensible heat fluxes and just present data on daily ET. And this is actually historic lysimeter data, but it will be applied to the BAREX-08. And this research was supported by the Ogallala Aquifer Program, a national program, 211. And disclaimer, in case I mention a commercial product. There's the familiar energy balance equation where the sensible heat flux or the sensible heat flux is driven by the temperature gradient between the aerodynamic temperature and the air temperature. In practical remote sensing applications, some form of the radiometric temperature is used in substitution for the aerodynamic temperature. And however, the sensible heat flux term is sensitive to that temperature gradient. Well, we in remote sensing, we have spatially distributed radiometric temperature available, but we have to assume that air temperature is not spatially distributed because it's usually only available at point measurements at nearby weather stations. Okay, but as we know, it also varies spatially, and that can introduce a lot of air. But also, the radiometric surface temperature is subject to errors due to calibration, atmospheric correction, and also partitioning it into the various components of the surface. Here's an example of the difference between air temperatures measured within about 200 meters. The blue line is air temperature measured over corn with 14% cover, and then the green line is measured at a reference weather site with well-irrigated fescue about 200 meters away. And as you can see, there's about a 1 to 2 degree C difference throughout most of the day. So a few ways around that, the C-ball and metric algorithms use a linear relation between the radiometric temperature and the temperature gradient. Other approaches used a temperature difference approach. One approach that was published by Martha Anderson in 1997 used radio sondes to get the air temperature out of the equation, but that required atmospheric soundings. John Norman, building on that, developed a dual temperature difference approach, which essentially measures the temperature components about an hour after dawn and then sometime before solar noon. And here's a kind of shows the idea behind that, where you take the temperature difference an hour after sunrise and then say about 6 hours after sunrise, and you subtract those two and then solve for the sensible heat flux term. An hour after sunrise, you have not very much sensible heat flux, but you do have some. So those terms don't necessarily go away in your equation. Okay, so given the inherent biases, we decided to try this approach since we have time series data. We use the, for the energy balance model, we use the two-source model with series resistances, and that allows energy exchange between the soil surface and the canopy, which is more appropriate for bushland because we do have a lot of advective energy, and we found that the series resistance, although a little more computationally intense, did a better job compared with the simpler parallel resistance version. So the basic objective was to test the dual temperature approach. We measured ET with our large weighing lysimeters at Bushland, Texas. That's a semi-arid climate characterized by strong regional advection. We have quite a bit of atmospheric demand, and took a data set consisting of six crops, alfalfa, corn, cotton, sorghum, soybean, and winter wheat. Most of these were fully irrigated, although some were 50% in dry land. There's a location of Bushland. We're about 14 miles west of Amarillo. The left picture shows the rainfall gradient. We have a very steep rainfall gradient, and then the one on the right is in that outline is the Ogallala Aquifer, which is our sole water source for irrigation. And most of the land over the Ogallala is either farm or rangeland. Here's a picture of the weighing lysimeters. They're 3 by 3 meters. They 2.3 meters deep with monolithic cores. Counterweight design, and there are four of them in the center of 4 or 5 hectare fields arranged in a square pattern. Only clear days were used, mostly daytime from 6A to 6P. 6 second frequency average to 30 minute averages. Each lysimeter was fully instrumented. We had ground-based infrared thermometers viewing the lysimeter surfaces consisting of Everest Model 400 or Exergen IRTCs. I'm still trying to twist my boss Terry Howe's arm to outfit him with Apogees. Maybe next year. Latent heat flux was scaled to daily ET using the ASCE standardized Penma Monteith for a short reference crop. And I'm going to talk more about scaling from instantaneous to daily ET values at another talk tomorrow. One other comment, we made a number of two-source model refinements where we accounted for the non-random spatial distribution of row crops, where the row crops were modeled as a continuous ellipse. And that did a little bit better job than the more commonly used clumping index approach, and we have a few manuscripts in review. Okay, here's how the models did. Essentially, we compared the two-source model, where we just took one time a day latent heat flux, and compared it to the dual temperature difference model, which is essentially the two source taken at two times a day, an hour after sunrise and 6 hours after sunrise. As you can see, we had similar results as these were clear, very clear days. We had a little bit more scatter with the dual temperature difference. Sometimes it would tend to overshoot itself at higher measured ET values up in here. However, it took care of a substantial amount of the bias, especially at lower ETs earlier in the morning. Here we have a lot of overestimates here, but with the dual temperature difference approach, that reduced the bias by quite a bit. Here's an example of air temperature data known to be biased. This was measured over irrigated soybeans, and so it was a somewhat similar environment over the soybeans as compared with the nearby reference site, which was, again, about 200 meters away. And we have about a 5 degree C difference. The blue line was air temperature measured at 2 meters over the soybean, and then the green line was the air temperature measured at 2 meters by the weather pin. Okay, so it's pretty clear that we had a problem with that air temperature over the soybean. Okay, comparing the two source model, again taken at one time a day, with the dual temperature at two times a day, the dual temperature cleaned up the bias inherent with using the bad air temperature data quite a bit. We went from 56% down to just under 2%. And so, whereas the dual temperature did not make that big of a difference when you have good data, when you have biased data or some problem, it really did a good job of taking care of that. So, to summarize, the dual temperature difference approach had a greater error compared with the two source, but it did take care of some of the bias. And of course, using air temperature data known to be bad, the dual temperature did do a good job of correcting that, whereas the two-source model using one time a day did not. And so future research will focus on modeling early morning surface temperatures to make the dual temperature difference operational. So you don't necessarily have to rely on acquiring two radiometric temperature differences at two times a day, since most satellite and aircraft overpasses restrict you to just one time a day measurement. Thank you all for your attention.
We have time for questions.
Judy.
You may be deaf by Karen. What do you mean by bad air?
Well, I'm saying both. I don't know why it was bad, but it. I showed it to Karen, and she says, "Well, I wouldn't use that." And I said, "And that's why I used it."
I have a question for the. You showed that the temperature did not stay cool. Can you show me? The bad temperature, you get the bad results from the SEBA or from metric. Do you know, can you explain a little bit more? Why?
Say it again.
I think you have one more slide to show the performance of 2,000 model versus to the next one probably.
That one?
Yes, this one.
Okay.
With the bad air temperature, I mean, you just mentioned the air temperature, bad or not. Why that one is better than the two source model? Can you explain anything?
Oh, well, with the two source model, the temperature gradient, that red line is the radiometric surface temperature, or the directional brightness temperature, okay? The temperature gradient, assuming that air temperature was in fact bad, the blue line, is reduced, okay? And so you will reduce your sensible heat flux. You will underestimate your sensible heat flux. And because that's solved as a residual, you will in turn overestimate your latent heat flux. And therefore, that will result in an overestimate of the daily ET. That's why... that's the reason for that overestimate, okay? But if you use that same temperature and you apply the dual temperature approach, you will subtract that bias out of there, okay? I essentially got the same results using the air temperature data from the nearby weather station in substitution for that measured over the soybean field. Does that answer your question?
Thanks. You don't have satellite image data. You only have the field infrared for your targets, right?
Well, for this study, yes, I did not use satellite data, but we do have satellite and aircraft data, but I restricted this to ground-based data to get the 2 times a day measurement, but also so as not to deal with atmosphere correction issues.
I wonder the angles of the side infrared, you know, the IRT issue related to the 2000 and the SEPA, because I haven't seen it, you know. So
well,
it's very good presentation. Thanks.
Okay. So as long as your bad air temperature has a consistent bias, you're okay.
Well, yeah. Now some of these that's a an obvious example, but some of these did not have a consistent bias. That they may have had a little bit of bias. So in other words, I'm not sure if that statement's correct.
More questions.
Okay, cool. Thank you all much.